the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to the New South Wales Country Hour. Michael Condon here broadcasting again from Casino. And Kim Honan, we're going to put a focus on the election, but also on beef, because obviously that's what this Casino Primex is all about, but a bit of politics thrown in as well today.
I look very excited about that. We are in the seat of Page, so we're going to explore that a little bit more in a moment and hear from a lot of people, not just in this region, but around the state, to hear what they're thinking this election.
We will do that in a moment, and we'll also hear some live music again, this time from a local girl who's from Mumblegum. She's going to be...
Mumblegum.
She's going to... I knew I'd get that wrong. And we'll be hearing from Katie Brooks shortly on the program as well. A bit of live music and a bit of a chat about her career too. So that's all coming up. But first, let's turn our attention to the election, because we're going to get a taste now of what people are thinking about tomorrow's election in regional New South Wales, because our rural reporters, well, they've been around the state and they've been speaking to people about what the big issues are for them and how they're planning to vote.
This election coming up on Saturday is probably so vital for Australia. We view it as probably one of the most important elections, particularly in the agricultural industry.
Right-wing parties with policies that preclude against immigration and refugees are not going to get my preferences.
Love to see Scott Morrison win. I don't think it'd be good for the people on the land, for the Labor to get in, but hopefully Scott will get in. Make us all happier?
Probably environment more than anything, yeah. I'll probably vote Labor, and I'll also vote the Senate will be the Greens.
You know, water resources and land, not giving land to multinational companies and keeping it, the ownership here in Australia.
I think the taxing for us retirees especially, tax.
I think climate change is not as such a major issue to us as mainly being able to have the freedom to manage our farms under freedom of those basic things. We feel that this election is a very vital decision for Australians to make.
I just look at the people in charge, and same as running any business, it's a business you got to run. The people in charge make businesses happen or not happen, and unfortunately Labor's reputation in business isn't very good.
Environment is the main issue for this election. Okay, it's a major one. We don't have the environment, we have nothing.
Completely agree, environmental, and I don't feel any party has been genuine or strong enough on moving on it.
I'll be voting Green.
Yeah. I'll go Greens, but there's still work to be done for sure.
We hear a lot in the press about house affordability in cities and etc. We've got a real labour shortage in regional areas, and there's a huge opportunity for people to come out to regional areas to contribute to local economy.
I'm hoping for action on climate change and for regional, you know, regional and rural Australia to be considered. There's lots of stuff about congestion in cities and the difficulties in the cities and infrastructure in cities. Regional and rural Australia often get left out.
So it'll be interesting to see how it does pan out. Flip a coin.
That's a look at what's on the mind of some of the voters in regional New South Wales as we head into the election tomorrow. And also in the news, of course, you'd have to be living under a rock to not hear about Bob Hawke. There have been so many tributes pouring in for former Prime Minister Bob Hawke, who's passed away yesterday evening at the age of 89. Well, let's have a look at his impact on agriculture and the bush. And one of the founders of Landcare has credited Bob Hawke's support of the environmental movement as one of his biggest legacies to rural Australia. Landcare became a national program in July 1989, when the Australian government, with bipartisan support, announced its Decade of Land Care plan and committed $320 million to fund the National Land Care program. Former agri-politician and Queensland grazier Jock Douglas says Mr. Hawke was quick to recognise the value of a community approach to land management.
Well, I certainly wasn't there when he was told about it, but I know when I heard him talking about it, or saw him talking about it, he was a strong advocate. He saw the benefit of it. You know, the idea of community groups and landholder groups taking responsibility for better land management, he grasped that straight away. And he's a sort of consensus type person. I was quite amazed, really, about how good a prime minister he was, because I was feared about his background and unionism and everything. And this won't be nice. But in fact, he was an amazing consensus person and grasped the good ideas and went with those and took people with him because of the consensus. So he was a good prime minister, no doubt about that.
What did his support of Landcare mean for the movement? Obviously, there were funds directed towards it and it became a national entity.
Oh, it meant a lot. I mean, we had Landcare groups up and running and community groups. They sort of grew then into action groups because it was hard to take on some of the bigger projects without funding. And the funding stream came through the decade of Landcare, and that gave some wheels for the wagon. The community empowerment grew then into action.
Jock Douglas, your role not only with Landcare but also as part of the National Farmers Federation saw you meet Bob Hawke again. Tell me about that interaction.
Ian McLaughlin was the president of the National Farmers Federation then. A lot would remember him. And we had a meeting set up with Hawke, Keating and Kerrin across in the cabinet room, old Parliament House we're talking about here, lovely old place. Six or seven of us, I can't remember exactly the number, but at least six went across from the NFF executive, and I was one of them. Each had a subject to talk about, to raise and discuss with those three. We went into the room, they came in, and we just stood around and had a chat, met each of us and had a little chat to each of us, I suppose. And then they sat up in the old cabinet rooms in a form of a U. It's a lovely table, and across the bar of the U would be the raised table where the three sat, and we each took it in turns to raise the subject. They had no advisors, no one coming along to say something in their ear, just the three and us and we six. And we went round, probably had 10 or 15 minutes on each sort of subject, 10, maybe 5, and Hawke individually called the name, asked the name of each person. He remembered everyone as we went round. I almost held my breath when we got, I was thinking, number 5 or something. There's still a couple of go after me. He remembered everyone. And just an amazing memory and application to what he did. He raised what they'd been spoken to him about, in the few minutes we'd met beforehand. So that was quite an eye-opener. And I can remember that, but I can't even remember the subject that I raised with him. So that's the effect he had there. It was pretty good.
It left that kind of impression on you. As an agri-political contemporary of his, of course, his prime ministership, the longest as a Labor politician, the longest prime ministership, what do you believe Bob Hawke's real legacy was, especially in relation to rural Australia?
Oh, for me, it was certainly land care. And, they were pretty tough times then. We weren't doing well. In farming generally was going through hard times. And so the farming representation then was in its infancy and pretty outspoken, I suppose. But Hawke's legacy in amongst all that, I thought, he had a good minister and he supported a good minister in Kerrin. So, and things got done, a lot of things got done.
That's Jock Douglas, who's one of the founders of Landcare, and he was speaking to Arlie Felton Taylor. You're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour. Also a reminder that we're on Facebook Live as well on the ABC North Coast Facebook page. So check us out there. And we'll be hearing some live music shortly here from Primex. And also we'll be talking about dairy as well. Of course, the dairy industry struggling at the moment. We talk about graziers and the Landcare movement struggling when Bob Hawke was the Prime Minister. And the drought then, also some issues still with the dairy industry and pricing as well. We'll be talking about that shortly on the program. But before we do that, let's look again at politics. And Kim Honan, we're here in the seat of Page. Now, this seat has been one that's been up for grabs back and forth, and It looks, though, it's not really in play this time, and I guess maybe we should look at some of the reasons why that might be the case.
I'm certainly not a betting person, so I would have no idea who's going to win on Saturday, but Kevin Hogan has held the seat since 2013. It is a marginal Nationals-held seat, 2.3%. It covers some nearly 20,000 square kilometres, stretches up to the Queensland border and down south through Grafton into northern parts of Coffs Harbour. And we've got seven candidates this election. Kevin Hogan, we've got Patrick Deegan from Labor, the Independent, Fiona Lavini, Greens, Daniel Reid, and we've also got the United Australia Party, Christian Democrats and the Animal Justice Party. We did invite all candidates onto the Country Hour today, and we only had one commitment from the Independent, Fiona Lavini. Unfortunately, the others did not get back to us
or were not available. No, unfortunate, that's right. We tried to get him here to have a bit of a debate about some of the issues in the marginal seat, but you know, what can you do?
Well, certainly Kevin Hogan and Patrick Deegan said that they're very busy pre-polling today, probably in Lismore, so that's unfortunate. But let's hear some of the issues. I've headed off to the Lismore Organic Markets at the showground and across the road to the Lismore Cattle Markets at the sale yards this week to hear some of the issues from farmers in the Page electorate.
I'm Sarah Tindley. I'm living out at Lindendale, and we are organic farmers, and I'm a musician. For me, probably there's really only one, and I do think this has to be a climate change election. I think, you know, the writing seems to be on the wall that we are heading towards some kind of disaster, and I just think it needs to be taken seriously and put before economic values and stuff.
G'day, my name's Aaron Davidson. I'm from Red Earth Organics, and I live just near Lismore, a little place called Rouse Mill, where I grow organic vegetables for a living. Definitely issues would be food and water security as a farmer. That's been a big issue in the last 12 months with droughts and climate change and everything. So that would be at the top of my priorities because it really affects my life and my industry, everything. Definitely the Greens are always appealing. So yeah, I'm yet to decide which direction I'm going to go.
Hi, I'm Sam. I'm from Cooked and Cultured and from Lismore. I'm always voting on climate change because as a young person, I'm pretty worried about my future and the future of my kids. Coal seam gas and, all of that sort of exploration. So having Labor come up to support that was a big, big disappointment for me. I'd usually preference them, and I'm probably going to think twice about that this time.
So do you know who you're voting for there?
Most likely the Greens. Might get the Together Party up in there somewhere in the Senate. The two major parties are really, really down the bottom for me.
Well, I'm called Susie Godden, and I'm from Conorrigan, where I'm a pig farmer. Well, it has to be the environment every step of the way. If we don't have a planet to live on, then that's a big issue. I think we should be spending more on our environment. We should be paying more for food, we should be paying more for fuel, we should be paying more for electricity. Everything that our current governments are saying that we should be saving money on, I think we should be paying for it.
I'm Bevan Jolly. I come from Rock Valley. It's about 14k from Lismore. I have macadamia nut trees and beef cattle.
Well, we're here at the Lismore cattle markets. You know, what are some of the big issues for you this federal election?
I reckon one which will affect everybody is the price of our power, what's it costing us for power. And the other one is trying to drought-proof the country.
And so do you know how you're voting then, come Saturday?
I don't like either of them. These other fellows that's in now, they've had 6 years to do something and they've sort of sat on their hands. And the other fellow, he's going to affect their... We won't go into surplus, we'll go into debt deeper because he's promising too much. And I'm against this a government telling us what sort of car we can buy.
Hi, I'm Bill Beam. I'm a builder and I have a property out of Kirong. My main concern would be that if the Bill Shorten gets in, he may try to take a lot of the small businesses, damage the small business people.
As a beef producer, what would you like to see from an incoming government?
Oh, I'd just like to see them look after the exports and probably weed control. There's a lack of weed control on the North Coast. The amount of money we're getting for our product now is not enough to look after the properties in a proper condition.
So do you know who you're voting for Saturday then?
I do. I'd be voting for Kevin Hogan.
There you go. Some of the farmers from the Page electorate there, Michael, at the Lismore cattle markets and the organic markets here in Lismore. But there has been one sector in this region, in the seat of Page, which has been calling for change from both the Coalition and Labor, and that's the dairy industry. Both parties have now released their policies, Labor promising to have the ACCC investigate a floor price for milk, and the Coalition promising an ACCC dairy specialist. But local farmer Paul Weir isn't really convinced with either policy and is a little disappointed. This is what he had to say.
I'm disappointed with them both, really. I must admit that Joel Fitzgibbon has been very approachable, and he has been very approachable to all the dairy industry up and down the coast, which is really good, and been open and listening. But his policy, once again, it is a promise to investigate and not a hard, firm promise to create 100% create change. I was hoping coming into this election that we would, after the last 12 months of the turmoil the deer industry's been in, that we would be able to get through this campaign some solid outcomes. All politicians, if they actually don't understand the issue of the deer industry now, well, I certainly wouldn't be worth wasting the time on voting for him. And I feel very disjointed between the Nats and the Liberals. David Littleproud has been out and been very vocal, but still realistically after 12 months of doing that and umpteen meetings with dairy farmers up and down the coast, really hasn't offered anything really greatly to fully 100% fix our issues. And once again, Scott Morrison, who's finally met with some farmers down the south coast, and to come out of that, it did seem that he was pretty oblivious to actually what was going on within the industry. He was very open to the farmers, talking to the farmers down there, but it seems to be a big disconnect between the National Party and the Liberal Party as to actually what's actually happening on the ground. And that really worries me as a voter that, who do you give your vote for? You know, for me, there's only one issue for me, and that's the turmoil in the dairy industry. It's my whole family's existence, has done for generations. And, I'm watching all my friends and in Victoria and in Queensland lose their businesses and seeing now shortages on shelves and imports coming in, and you're sort of, left wondering really what's happening. I am getting to the point, though, of actually fully believing that both Labor and Liberal are just happy to watch the dairy industry fall by the wayside, as with other industries that they've dealt off in free trade deals. I honestly believe that, like the pork industry, that the dairy industry is going to be the next victim on, that we're just going to keep dwindling away until we don't exist anymore.
That's Paul Weir, who was a farmer from Tuncester, and he was talking about the dairy industry there and his concerns about the election, and he's saying he's quite disappointed with both sides of politics at the moment, both of the major parties. And as the helicopters fly overhead, you're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour. We're broadcasting, of course, live on Facebook as well, on the ABC North Coast Facebook page. And shortly we'll have a musical interlude, but before we do that, we'll continue talking about the issue of dairy. And I guess Graham Forbes from Dairy Connect, the feedback you're getting is that dairy farmers are concerned about this election because they feel as though they need action, but they're not liking what they're hearing.
Yeah, I think farmers are quite frustrated with the industry at the present time. Yet, the proof of the pudding and the floor price will be something we're looking forward to if Labor is elected. Certainly, farmers would like to see or Dairy Connect would like to see independent advocate for dairy, and we find that very important that we'd be able to take issues regarding contracts and payment systems and transparency through the industry through to an independent government advocate.
I guess the other issue is, will it change their vote? Will they think now, when the past, where dairy farmers traditionally would vote for the National Party, now they're thinking about looking at Labor because of the minimum milk price issue?
Yeah, I think farmers are looking at both of those policies, but I think they want to see a bigger picture happen in the industry, and we need total reform within the industry for all the bodies. Most of the bodies have failed the industry, and the production figures certainly show that, and we need total reform. We've got the dairy plan or the Brumby plan, or maybe the lack of Brumby plan. There's a lot of discussion there. Where is John out there? But certainly we're looking...
Well, there's certainly been criticism that it would be too Victorian-focused because he's at the helm.
Yes, and he hasn't been seen. So, but look, we're looking at we really need a good, strong dairy voice. We need basically an umbrella group called Dairy Voice to encompass all the dairy industry. A lot of our current organisations are exclusive of different parts of the industry, and we need to speak as one voice. We need to have all the different opinions underneath a single umbrella, but we need to be able to aggregate that voice into a single voice, and the dairy industry can then make a pathway forward.
And I guess, too, the other thing is the competition issue and the supermarket power, and the pricing issue and export issue too. So there's a range of things, and you can't really deal with all of those things all together unless you have a united voice or united single
Correct.
Person.
We were successful in breaking the dollar a litre milk campaign with Woolworths firstly, and now Coles and Aldi, but to break the whole lot we need total industry unity and everyone working together to do that, because there's just that many sectors. The other side is we have a domestic fresh milk sector that's just quite different to the export industry, and that needs to be addressed in the way we move forward.
Okay, so you feel as though there is some action from some of those points in the industry to make some of this happen?
Oh, most definitely, and we will be campaigning hard through these series of meetings that have already started, and we'll be making sure that the message is getting out there that the current system's broken and it needs to be rebuilt.
And do you think the message is getting out there?
Oh, most definitely. There's a lot of chatter out there on social media at the moment.
And do you think it is going to get a national play, though?
I think so. Most of the bodies are really struggling at the moment. We need to get out there on a positive front and unite everyone.
Okay, all right. Well, good luck with that, and we'll speak to you after the election, and no doubt you'll have some meetings with some of the new people involved in the government as a result of that too.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks for your time. You're listening to The Country. That was Dairy Connect's Graham Forbes, and we're broadcasting here from Casino. But it's time now on our Facebook Live, it's time for a bit of a musical interlude. We're joined by a local gal. From not far away. Good afternoon.
Good
Katie
afternoon.
Brooke, how are you going?
I'm good. How are you going?
And you've been performing here. You've been performing a lot. You must be tired.
Yeah, a little bit. I was up at about 5 this morning to be in here and ready to sing at 6 o'clock, but it was a wonderful experience. So.
Okay. So have you done the Primex before? Is this your first time?
I don't think I've actually performed at Primex before, even though I'm from here. This is the first time, so it's something different. And, yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
And local talent as well. You are looking to... improve your career. You've got some new music out as well?
I have, yes. Late last year I released my debut single, Hometown Song, and that did really, really well. I had lots of success from that. So following that, we'll have the debut EP release this year, and that'll have 5 more original songs as well. So plenty to do, plenty of work.
And not just performing here, you hope to be touring around as well?
Yeah, I like touring my region though. I usually go down to about Coffs Harbour and then up as far as Brisbane and the Sunshine Coast. So I love the coastal area and being around home again. I did a lot of touring out west in the last couple of years when I lived in Tamworth, so it's good to be home.
Okay, and obviously Tamworth, the country music mecca as well, so that's a good place to be. Where did you do all your recording? Was it in Tamworth?
Yeah, I recorded at Fat Track Studio with Rusty Crook in Tamworth, and as I said, lived out there for a couple of years, so worked under a couple of different agencies and was very busy gig-wise out there as well.
Okay, well, you'll have to do some gigs to get the EP out there as well, no doubt.
Definitely.
Well, and you're going to play for us something now. Are you playing the single?
Yeah, I'll play Hometown Song for you today.
Yep, that'd be great. Well, let's take it away with the helicopter in the background.
And before you know it, the whole town knows the next one. The bar on every corner makes it a lot less boring. We all hang out dirty laundry out together, 'cause that makes it all better. Everybody's got a hometown song. We all sing it till the break of dawn. Little homie, I've been doing routine. She's calling out, I'll be home.
bright other lights. Nothing fits me like the love of this country sky. No one knows me better than my birds of a feather. This town wide by somehow helps me keep it together. Everybody's got a hometown song we all sing till the break of dawn. Little humming of a dirt road tune, she's calling out, I'll be home soon. We'll stray, we'll walk all over the world, but never for too long. We always come back singing our hometown song. There's nothing else to do, just pour a drink. We all love it, despite what we make you think. Everybody's got a hometown song, we all sing it till the break of dawn. Little humming of a dude road tune, she's calling out, I'll be here soon. Never thought too long. We always come back singing our hometown song. Hometown song.
Great.
Give her a hand. That's not easy to do, so well done.
No, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
That was great, terrific, and well done. You're listening to The Country Hour, Katie Brook there, local girl who's, that's her single that's out, and she's there's an EP coming as well shortly, and no doubt she'll be touring too. You're listening to The Country Hour. It's 28 minutes to one. It's time to get some news headlines with Stephanie Gardner.
Good afternoon. Former Prime Minister Bob Hawke is being remembered by figures across the political spectrum as someone who had a unique connection with the Australian people. The Labor luminary died yesterday at the age of 89. And in the Blue Ribbon Liberal seat of North Sydney where Mr Hawke lived, locals are remembering him as a lovable larrikin as news of his death sinks in. Former Prime Minister Tony Abbott says Bob Hawke was Australia's best Labor Prime Minister, who is rightly being mourned today. The Warringah MP refused to make further comments about Mr Hawke after a statement he released last night was criticised for politicising Mr Hawke's death. The Prime Minister is making his final campaign pitch in Queensland, saying tomorrow's election will go down to the wire. Scott Morrison started his morning in Townsville before flying north to Cairns, where longtime MP Warren Entsch is fighting to hold off the ALP. Mr Morrison says the coalition should be re-elected because the economy is strong and providing opportunities for Australians. And a Senate candidate for the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party says he'll push for a review of foreign ownership laws of agricultural land if elected. The party's New South Wales Senate candidate, Brett Cook, says he is seeing a record number of young farmers moving off the land and taking up jobs in regional centres. More news at 1 o'clock.
Thanks, Stephanie. Let's go to the weather now. And Gabrielle Woodhouse is at the Bureau. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael.
So it's we had a few showers here this morning, but it's cleared up here at Casino at Primex, and I gather that it's going to be fine for the next while here. Is that right, on the north coast?
To be honest, up in the far northeast at the moment, we are seeing a few showers on the radar, so I wouldn't say that it's all over and done with in terms of some showers up there for the next several days, let alone like the next couple of hours. So otherwise, across the state, we're looking at pretty dry conditions, although we will see some morning frost patches around the southern tablelands and potentially some really localised areas around the central tablelands over the next morning or two. But realistically, over the next few days, the story is going to be the warm temperatures. And otherwise, there's very little happening across the state with a pretty solid high-pressure ridge across the region.
Okay, so we're going to see higher than average temperatures. That's what we're seeing, particularly over the divide?
Yeah, particularly over the western parts of the state, we will see temperatures several degrees above average, and that's both overnight temperatures and daytime temperatures. Although across the southern parts of the state, that's where we'll see some cooler nights. So the temperatures themselves, today, I mean, we're looking at temperatures getting into the mid-20s broadly across the northern half of the state, although a little bit cooler around the ranges, and sort of low 20s across the southern half. A pretty similar story for Saturday and Sunday, although the temperatures over the far west will start to climb into the mid-20s, maybe getting up to 26 or 27 degrees over the very far west of the state. Minimum temperatures.
That's a few degrees above average there.
It is a few degrees above average, and to be honest, that just keeps increasing over the next few days with sunny skies and light winds.
Okay, and looking further, because there was that system that was supposed to come through, maybe some rain in the Riverina, but that sort of was pushed away to the south, was it?
Yeah, so that system at the moment looks to just skim across the sort of southeast of the continent, and so we might see a shower or two pretty much near the Victorian border on Monday and into Tuesday. It'll be more likely like along the Victorian border through the Riverina, but we may see a few showers around the southwest slopes and the adjacent ranges there on Monday and into Tuesday, but otherwise it's a relatively dry week ahead.
Okay, anything on the computer modelling beyond that? Any sign of any changes?
From what I can see at the moment, for the next week, we have a really steady belt of high pressure across sort of New South Wales and across towards Western Australia, and that doesn't seem to look as though it's going to change too much over the coming days. And realistically, the only bit of weather that we're looking at is a couple of showers in the far northeast, but small rainfall totals with those, and a shower or two across the southern inland Monday and into Tuesday.
Okay, and not too much change on the way. All right, well, we'll leave it there. Thanks for that, Gabrielle.
My pleasure.
Gabrielle Woodhouse there. You're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour, and we're going to talk to Rob Cinnamon from Yugalbarr Stud in a moment. But before we do that, let's head to southeast New South Wales. While camp drafting is the fastest growing equine sport, it's estimated around half the camp drafts have been cancelled in the past year due to drought. Over the next few days, the best camp drafters in the country will compete at Woolunga Park for the gold belt buckle and $100,000. Let's cross now to our reporter, Josh Becker, who's there.
Good afternoon, Michael. We're here down at Woolunga Park at Borley Point on the New South Wales south coast at the World Championship Gold Buckle Camp Draft. The sun's shining. It's a still day. There's cattle in the ring at the moment. There's camp drafting underway, round two of the event here. And joining me to have a chat about the event, but also the season. It's been a tough one for a lot of camp drafts across New South Wales and Queensland and Victoria this year. I've got Nigel Cable and Scott Shea. Nigel, I'll start with you. You're fresh out of the ring and from Lithgow. How did your run go today?
Yeah, not as well as expected, but yeah, we got a first peg and round a second peg and then just come to grief, so yeah.
You're a veteran of the camp drafting circuit, and also you've got a well-known horse. Can you tell us a little bit about the horse you're riding?
Oh, yeah, Old Ivory's been around for a long time and been to a lot of places and had a fair bit of success over the years, and he's still looking after us pretty well now. He's 21-year-old and still as keen as what he was when he was a 5-year-old.
And how does this camp draft here at Woolunga Park compare to some of the others that you have attended across New South Wales?
Yeah, it doesn't really compare with many camp drafts at all. It's like a golf course. It's everything's green and just set up so well, and just an absolute credit to Terry Snow and his team and all the fellas they got working here. Everything's just running to clockwork, and yeah, you don't see anything any better.
Just on that, Terry Snow's spoken about his goal to take camp drafting and make it a mainstream sport. It's already one of the fastest growing equine sports, but if there's thoughts about taking it to the next level, what do you think needs to happen to get camp drafting out to a wider audience?
Yeah, well, the main thing needs to happen, we need longer weekends and more cattle, because there's that many people wanting to do it, and it's such a great family sport. Kids from 8-year-old and even the younger kids ride around at the venues, right up to your 80-year-old competitors. They all compete on the same level, and the cattle brings everybody back to an even playing field, and it's just such a great family sport that just everybody's trying to get into it, and the waiting lists every weekend, just getting longer and longer because the weekends aren't long enough and you can't get enough cattle.
Nigel, you're from Lithgow. Give us a sense of how things are on your farm.
Yeah, we're very lucky at the moment. Yeah, like everybody's dry and we're probably not as good as we'd like to be going into the winter, like up on the top of the mountains there. But we're still a lot better than anywhere else that I've seen. So, yeah, we're not complaining, but a lot of people are doing it pretty tough.
And just on that, this year they estimate around half the camp drafts around Australia have been either postponed or cancelled due to the drought and also floods in Queensland. From a camp draft point of view, has it been a tough year for farmers and rural communities?
Yeah, well, it has been tough for the camp drafters with nowhere to go, but it's been a lot tougher for the cattle owners, and that's why there hasn't been any on, because, you know, the cattle are being hand-fed all the time and it just makes it very difficult. And, camp drafting's a sport and we all love it, but, you know, it's the welfare of the cattle and all that that's more important than keeping cattle alive and people's livelihood.
Scott Shea, I might bring you in here. You've helped at Willinga Park with sourcing some of the cattle for today's event. What goes into sourcing 1,300 cattle for an event like this?
Yeah, well, we've been at it for months. Terry went and he's bought over 555 head, sourced them from as far as Casterton down in Victoria, Beaufort. There was a B-double out of Casterton, two B-doubles out of Beaufort. We backgrounded them down there and then come up and we bought some more up around Adelong and all local, and then the rest of them are all just donated generously from people from around the district here in Milton Ulladulla and over the mountain to Braidwood and as far as Murrum Bateman.
So it's a significant planning exercise, and I guess the logistics of getting them all here at the right time and in the right condition for camp drafting?
Yeah, definitely. And it's been a tough year, hard to source them. A lot of people not wanting to give up. We're not so much not wanting to get up, but you see that they haven't got feed, so you don't ask. But we've had plenty on reserve as well, so cattle hasn't been a problem. With the ones that Terry's bought, it's just made a big difference. We've been able to pick through the other guys a little bit more and try and pick out the best rather than having to try and source the whole lot, whereas Terry's purchased over half the cattle. So.
And are you off of farm, Scott? Are you based in Braidwood?
Yeah, we run sheep and cattle at Braidwood.
How are things going at your place?
Well, we've had no groundwater in the dams for 2 years, dams that have been, like, never seen dry for a long time since the 81 drought. Most of the plate's running on trough system. But we did get a little bit of summer rain. Being on the range there, we got a little bit of that coastal stuff, which give us a little bit of a green drought, I suppose you'd say.
And you're also competing here today. What is it about camp drafting that you enjoy?
Well, I can walk in, stand next to that camp draft arena and be next to the likes of Nigel Cable and Terry Hall and Mark Buttsworth. And it's not very many sports you can do that. Like, you can't go and play golf with Tiger Woods, can you?
So it's a pretty star-studded event, and the prize is pretty significant too.
Massive, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
100 grand, is that something that draws in camp drafters from around Australia?
I think it is, but it's more just the prestige of winning the event. The 100 grand's a great thing, but, like, yeah, just winning it would be enough for me.
Nigel, I'll bring you back in. Do you think that adding the prize money brings an extra prestige to this event?
Yeah, it obviously does, and it's great that there is that amount of money up, but there's only one winner, and, like, you know, everybody comes here and, you know, people don't expect to actually win the money. They're here for the competition and the high level of competition and see how everybody goes and see who does actually walk away with the 100 grand.
Last year, Pete Kaminsky won from Queensland. Who do you think are the favourites to win out this year?
Yeah, Pete's obviously the favourite because he's the favourite everywhere he goes. And, he hasn't won 20 or 30 open rider titles in Queensland for no reason. And, yeah, he's obviously the... But there's you know, other top fellas here, Ben Hall and Mark Buttsworth and Huey Miles. There's plenty of others here that can put a spanner in the works, and it just comes down to the cattle and who puts it around on the day.
Nigel Cable and Scott Shea, thanks for joining us on the Country Hour for today.
No worries, thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all we've got from Willinga Park, where it's the World Championship Gold Buckle Camp Draft underway. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks, Josh. And Josh Becker reporting there from the camp draft at Willinga Park. You're listening to the Country Hour broadcasting here from Casino, from Primex. And let's focus on beef, because a lot of this event is looking at the beef industry And one of the people that's synonymous with the beef industry in the region and has been for some time is Rob Cinnamon from Yugalbar Station. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Good afternoon. Great to be here.
And we've spoken to you before on the Country Hour about the devastating season that you had about a year ago, 12 months, and you had an extended, a record period without rain, and then you had some rain and you were elated. How have you been since then? That's the last time I think we spoke to you on the Country Hour.
Yeah, certainly, Michael. It's been a year of extremes, I suppose. We did get a short break in October last year, followed by a very hot, dry summer. And for the first time in the past, in my time at Yugalbar, the last 17 years, this has been the first summer that we've actually had failed summer crop. Surface water has become an issue. And the outlook going into winter, we certainly have reservations. We're a green drought right now, but coming if we see a cold, frosty winter, the other end of the season could be rather tough for us.
Right, and so what advice are you giving your owners, the Meyer family, the Bailieu family, about what's the outlook and what we should do with destocking perhaps?
Well, Mr. Meyer has a saying, sell and repent, but sell.
Right.
And it's not bad advice, probably. As it stands at the moment, we're in reasonable shape to handle the winter. We have enough winter forage crop that was planted early, and we're positioning ourselves to be able to handle the season. The concern, of course, is surface water at the other end.
And I guess the other thing, too, is you want to keep the cattle in good condition, the sales coming up, which is a big event at Yugalbar Station as well, so That's the important thing for you too, isn't it?
Of course, the first Friday in September is our annual production sale. It's a focal point for our business for the year, and we sell bulls from all over the country. And obviously, the wider the extent of the drought will have an impact on our business. So, we're rather concerned about that going forward. Doing all we can to prepare the cattle in the best possible order for that sale.
So in terms of the timeline, when do you think those critical decisions have to be made about what you're doing there?
Oh, look, I think the timeline's there now in terms of making decisions on what's going to be fed and kept for the season. Certainly, as a seed stock producer, our stud cattle, we're fairly committed to retaining those genetics. From a commercial standpoint, if it continues to worsen, we'll look to lighten off our weaners and feeder steer cattle. But we'll continue to monitor that on a daily basis on what's the best decision there.
And just generally, what are your neighbours saying? What are people saying as well to you about how they're going, how they're faring?
Look, I think everyone is certainly very aware of the circumstances right now, and it's quite some time since we've seen these conditions, but back in 2002, I do recall river levels as low as they were now, and I do recall a season probably worse than now. So, look, it has been, we've experienced it, and it is part of seasonal conditions that we can expect. It's at the worst end of what we would like right now, but it is part of farming in agriculture in Australia.
But the lead up wasn't great too. You had that extended period of record low rainfall and high temperatures as well in the lead up too, and then you did have a little bit of rain to keep you going.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're all becoming more aware of, is that we have to capitalise on that moisture when it's available, and think smarter about conserving feed and how we produce our kilos of beef, and what's the best way to the best outcomes for our business at the end of the day.
So is it climate variability? Is it climate change? Is it global warming? What are we seeing?
Look, I think climate change is something that's certainly been happening for centuries. I think it's something that we all have to be aware of, focus on, learn to farm with the seasons and the variances that we will have. And there will always be variants, whether it be flood or drought, unfortunately.
And looking at the stock that are here around, you would have had a look around. What do you think of the quality we're seeing here?
Oh, look, it's great to see such a wide variation of breeds represented here at Primex. Congratulations to the organisers of Primex. I think they've certainly done a good job in attracting a large number of businesses here this year. Certainly, I guess the businesses involved will be able to tell you tomorrow night just how well the the event's been for them.
And I guess too, the quality of what you're seeing on the ground. Obviously, these are quite pampered animals because they're out there. You know, they want them to look good, don't they? Like, as you would want your stock out there to look good too.
Yeah, look, you're looking at some of the seed stock that you're seeing here. Obviously, they've been fed, they've been prepared. It's the challenge as a seed stock producer is to produce animals that are fit and ready to go to work. So it's often a compromise between presentation and keeping those cattle fit and healthy and ready to work. So it's and that's eventually reflected in the values that you achieve for your sale cattle.
But you're not actually involved in the bull sale, or you're not selling here. You basically keep it to the station.
That's right. We use this as an opportunity to showcase our cattle to our clientele and potentially attract new customers. But our sales program is managed around an annual production sale at the station and private sales throughout the year. So it's we use this as an opportunity to speak to our clients and to interact with others and hopefully attract new business.
And try and get them there for the sale at the station. And having seen some vision from it, it's quite an event. I mean, it takes over that huge marquee full of people and certainly a lot of interest there.
Yeah, look, we 2 years ago we actually constructed quite a large sale venue there, and that's been fully utilised in the last few years. We have seen and privileged to have crowds of up to 600 people at our sales, and from all over Australia. And it's we're very honoured that people are recognising what we're doing, and we appreciate that support.
And what is it? What is it that you're doing differently or better? You know, do you think to attract that many people?
Look, I think it's about producing something that's commercially relevant, in industry focused, and it's also about client relationships and doing the right thing for your clients. If there's ever a problem, we need to be the first to fix it, and we're very passionate about client service and backup. And we like to think that we benchmark our cattle around the country in various competitions to reflect the quality of our cattle.
And objective measurement, more into it those days, those sorts of things, rather than just the by sight, by vision?
Definitely. Look, single trait selection in any way, shape or form is dangerous from my perspective. But phenotypically, these field days give us an opportunity to showcase what our cattle physically look like. But certainly performance recording gene markers and all the new technologies that are becoming available to us are all very important things for our consideration.
And is everyone now doing it, do you think? Has it become much more commonplace than it was, say, you know, 5 or 10 years ago?
I guess we're all looking to find that competitive edge and to keep ahead of the game. We're bits of technology junkies when it comes to it. We're often keen to try new technologies and to see how they'll fit into our operation. Many of them won't work, but some do, and it's recognising those technologies that put us at the front of the game and utilising the ones that are right for us that I think is important.
And so it's important, and it's changed, and you're looking, you know, you're hoping you get a change in what you're seeing from the last 12 months or so.
Yeah, well, look, I guess we've seen a flood in every month of the year on the north coast of New South Wales. So whilst it's not, we typically wouldn't expect a flood in the next few months, we've got to assume that climate is variable, and we'll take advantage of it when the time comes.
Terrific. Thanks for joining us on the Country Hour today.
Lovely.
It was good to catch up face to face.
Great to chat.
After
Cheers.
Chatting on the Country Hour over the last few years or so, that's Rob Cinnamon from Yugalbarra Stud, Yugalbarra Station. You're listening to the Country Hour, and the bull sale is it's underway. I think it's still underway. There's a couple of bull sales on at the moment here at Casino and the Primex event. And Jod Gibsons joins us from the Medland Angus Stud. And had 32 lots up for sale. You're between Casino and Lismore. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you, and good afternoon to everybody.
Yes, indeed. And so how did you go? Did you sell them all? Did you get good prices?
No, we didn't sell all our bulls. We had about a 70% clearance, and we topped at 7,000, and we averaged about $4,700 for what we've sold. And I think under the circumstances, we're quite happy with that. It's been a very hard season all over Australia, especially this eastern part, and some of our areas we've sold our bulls to, we didn't have a lot of clients this year, but hopefully it'll be different next year and they'll return to buy some bulls.
Right, so 70%, you were hoping to sell all of them, and the pricing was down on what you'd hoped
for? Yeah, the pricing was down. We had total clearance last year with an average of about 5,600 or 700. So we weren't expecting that today, because it's a tough season and still is. The North Coast looks quite green at the moment, but there's not a lot of grass around. But we did have bulls go for as far away as Kingaroy, Dorigo, and up and down the coast, so and out to Tenterfield. So we were quite pleased with that.
Okay, so and they are there many? Doesn't sound like there's many heading out further west than that.
No, not this time, because the drought is still very, very severe out there, and water is going to be very, very hard to find soon, I think, for some of those people.
Okay, so, and looking around at some of the others on offer, what did you think in terms of the quality?
Oh, well, our bulls are all performance recorded, they're scanned, and a lot of information given, breed plan recorded as well, and I think our bulls stack up very well with any bulls in Australia.
Do you think that 7,000 will end up being the top price, or you think someone will get...
The sales are over for the day. That's 7,000's the top.
So far?
No, the sales are finished for the day.
Right, okay. So that's the top price.
That's right.
And Angus, obviously, 100 years in Australia.
100 years, they've been a long time. They're popular. You know, it's not that long ago that Herefords were very strong, but the last 25 years we've seen a big expansion of Angus cattle all over Australia, and especially in the crossbreeding. So they're very popular at the moment.
They certainly are, and popular with consumers as well, as we're seeing. But why is that, do you think? Is it eatability factor, growth factor?
Well, I think it's they're docile cattle, and they do marble, and they're very good in feedlots, and you can, especially when you crossbreed them with the Ross Indicus cattle, they're very good crosses, and you've got a lot of uses for them.
Okay, do you think you might sell those 30% that are left? Someone might come over and tap you on the shoulder
over the next few months, I'm sure they'll go.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks for joining us on the Country Hour today. I hope you get a bit more rain and a bit more feed in your place.
Thank you very much.
No doubt you're not the only one. You wouldn't be Robin Scruso wanting that.
No, I think we're all sweating on that. It's a pretty hard season out there, and the winter's to come, so we just don't know what to expect. So I don't blame the people for not... all turning up, but it'll change.
Yep, indeed. It will rain. It's 3 minutes to one on the Country Hour. Time for markets. Let's go to Griffith Sheep and Lambs, and here's Crystal Ridley.
Good afternoon. Numbers lifted this hour with agents yarding 9,200 head. The 7,450 lambs pen quality was fair. Heavy and extra heavyweight lambs made up the majority of the offering, and the usual buyers are present competing in a dearer market. Light lambs reached $148 a head. Trade weights were $2 to $4 dearer, with the 18 to 20 kilo portion selling from $160 to $198. Heavy lambs lifted 5, with those up to 26 kilos ranging from $191 to $228, while extra heavy showed the biggest change, lifting $10 on the back of a quality offering. These sold from $225 to $300 a head. Carcass prices averaged from $764 to $860 a kilo. There were 1,750 mutton penned, with merinos making up the majority in another strong market. Merino ewes sold from $122 to $200, crossbreds reached $224, and Dorby ewes sold from $101 to $175. This has been Crystal Ridley at Griffith from LA.
And let's go to Cowra Sheep and Lambs now. Rob Pearce.
Good afternoon. Lamb numbers remained steady for 5,750. Quality was very good for the trade and heavyweights. There were mainly trades penned and a good run of heavy lambs. Medium and heavy trades were 3 to 10 dearer. 18 to 20 kilos sold from 160 to 172. 20 22, 175 to 193. 22 to 24, 187 to 200, averaging 800 to 810 cents. Heavyweights were 13 and up to 38 dearer. 24 to 26, 203 to 226. 26 to 30, 220 to 230, 30 plus, 255 to a top of 280, averaging 770 to 800 cents. Stores sold from 120 to 168, holding firm, and mutton numbers lifted by 390 for 1,000. Quality was varied. Medium grades were 5 to 10 dearer. Heavyweights were 30 dearer. Medium merino ewes sold from 122 to 150, averaging 590. Heavy first cross ewes sold from 175 to 230, averaging 650 cents. And it's been Rob Pearce from MLA at Cowra.
Thanks, Rob. And in the last 20 seconds, Kim Honan, we'd have a fabulous time here at Casino.
Oh, we have. And thank you so much for bringing the country out to Casino.
We'll have
Friday.
To come back.
You it's will.
We've had a
right.
great time. Yeah. Plenty happening.
Yeah, and one more day to go. And Saturday is generally the biggest day at Primex. So, yeah.
And it's time for the news. It's 1 o'clock.